I want you to imagine something for a second. Imagine you've spent like 220 hours mastering one of the most notoriously punishing, just completely unforgiving video games ever created.
Oh, man. That is a lot of hours to sink into a game.
Right. I mean, you've mapped out these massive digital landscapes in your head, you've memorized incredibly complex enemy attack patterns, and you've suffered through countless agonizing defeats just to, you know, finally secure your victories.
You've basically poured weeks of your actual life into this world.
Exactly. And then one day, you log in, and you are hit with a 6-month ban. You're completely exiled from the community, and all of your progress is locked away.
Just devastating.
Yeah, it's wild. So today, we're diving into the mechanics and the madness of the Deathbed Smalls incident.
Such a great name for an incident, by the way.
It really is. We're going to explore how sophisticated protective security systems can actually be weaponized against the innocent. We're unpacking the psychology of digital trust and figuring out what a bizarre gaming incident involving, well, digital underwear teaches us about the very real future of automated security.
Right, because it goes way beyond gaming.
Okay, let's unpack this.
And setting the gaming aspect aside for a moment, I think it's important to realize that this fundamental vulnerability affects all of us. I mean, if you interact with automated security systems,
which we all do.
Exactly. If you rely on bank fraud alerts or spam filters or, you know, algorithms that police your professional social media accounts, understanding how those exact defenses can be turned into weapons is crucial for navigating any digital space today.
Absolutely. So to really understand how this happened, we kind of have to set the scene. The game in question is Elden Ring.
Huge game.
Massive. It's April 2022, just weeks after this record-breaking launch. Millions of players are exploring this dark fantasy world. And sitting deep, deep in the game's compiled code is an item called the Deathbed Smalls.
Right, which was a piece of undergarment belonging to a non-playable character named Fia.
Right, the NPC who hugs you.
Yeah, she's this enigmatic figure in the game's central hub area. She has this unique mechanic where she literally embraces the player to offer temporary buffs. And this particular item of clothing was what the software industry calls cut content.
And cut content is such a fascinating byproduct of game development because the developers, from software, they actually created the item, coded it, and embedded it into the game file.
But then they took it out.
Well, they decided to remove any legitimate way for a player to actually acquire it in the game world right before the final release.
Because of the tone, probably.
Yeah. When we look at the narrative structure of the game, analysts suspect this was done to avoid unnecessary controversy. Fia's storyline deals with some very complex, somber themes about life and death.
And having players running around equipping her underwear would instantly turn a serious narrative arc into an internet meme.
Exactly. It would just completely distract from the lore they were trying to build.
But the problem with cut content is that it's rarely ever completely deleted from the source code. Game development is incredibly fragile in those final stages.
You change one thing and the whole game breaks.
Right. If you go in and start ripping out lines of code right before shipping, you risk breaking everything. Mm-hmm. So developers leave the assets in there. They just remove the door to access them.
So the item was technically still in the game.
Fully in the game. The Deathbed Smalls still had a unique inventory icon, specific defensive statistics, written lore in its item description, and a fully functional 3D model. It was perfectly functional. It was just sitting behind an invisible wall.
And of course, because nothing stays hidden on the internet for long, data miners found it within days of the game's release.
Oh, they always do.
Yeah, they used memory scanning tools like Cheat Engine to peer behind that invisible wall and force the item into their own inventories just to see what it was.
What's fascinating here is that data mining in this context is usually just an academic exercise. Players love digital archaeology, you know. They want to see what the developers left on the cutting room floor.
But someone took it a step further.
Yeah, the shift here and what makes this incident a watershed moment in digital security is how a user who went by the name Pantsuit Dealer took that academic curiosity and actively weaponized it. They turned it into a highly sophisticated social engineering attack.
It's so crazy. So the attack vector relied entirely on the game's multiplayer mechanics. Pantsuit Dealer would use the invasion system to force their way into another unsuspecting player's world.
But not to fight them.
No, which is the entire design purpose of an invasion. Instead, they would run up to the player, drop the Deathbed Smalls on the ground, and immediately use an item to sever the connection and vanish.
Just drop and run.
It's basically the digital equivalent of a stranger walking up to your front porch, leaving a beautifully wrapped but secretly radioactive package on your welcome mat, and sprinting away into the night.
That is a perfect analogy, because the package itself is the trap. The hacker doesn't need to do any further damage because they know the environment will do it for them.
Right.
The moment the victim picks up that item, a hidden chain reaction begins that will ultimately trigger the game's own security system to destroy them.
So breaking down that chain reaction, it actually reveals a massive blind spot in modern cybersecurity. It's essentially a seven-stage process.
Walk us through it.
So the hacker first goes completely offline. They disconnect their computer from the internet, which neutralizes the game's anti-cheat monitoring.
Sneaky.
Very. In that dark space, they use external software to inject the forbidden item into their character's save file. Mm. Then they boot back online. They bypass the initial login scan because the system isn't looking for items during the handshake, invade a victim, and drop the bait.
And once the victim picks up the bait, the trap is fully set. The actual execution happens the next time the victim launches their game.
That's when the anti-cheat wakes up.
Exactly. The anti-cheat system, which is a software suite called Easy Anti-Cheat, or EAC, wakes up and scans the user's local save file. It hits the inventory section, cross-references it with its database of permitted items, and flags the deathbed smalls as illegal cut content.
And boom.
Boom. It immediately labels the victim as a malicious hacker and issues an automatic 180-day soft ban, exiling them to quarantine servers populated only by actual cheaters.
Okay, but this is the part of the architecture that really demands scrutiny for me. Because Easy Anti-Cheat doesn't just run like a normal application, right? It operates at the kernel level.
That's right, kernel level access.
Which, for anyone unfamiliar, means this software is sitting in the absolute deepest, most privileged ring of your Windows operating system. It has the keys to the entire kingdom.
It sees everything.
It can monitor your RAM, your drivers, every single background process running on your machine. So if a system possesses that level of omnipotent access, it seems completely illogical that it couldn't simply see that another player dropped the item and our victim merely picked it up. Why couldn't it see that?
That paradox is the core of a critical cybersecurity concept known as detection versus attribution. It is the fundamental difference between identifying what is wrong and determining who is responsible for making it wrong.
Okay, so it detected the item but couldn't attribute where it came from.
Exactly. EAC is an incredibly powerful detection engine. It scans the save file and instantly recognizes a violation. It says, hey, this item should not exist in this environment. But its architecture completely lacked the capacity for attribution. It had no memory of the event itself.
So it couldn't see the history of the item's creation. It only saw the final state of the inventory.
This is known in the field as the origin problem. To the kernel-level anti-cheat system, there was zero mathematical difference between a player who maliciously injected code to spawn the item and a player who organically pressed a button to pick an item up off the grass.
It sees the item and assumes you're the hacker.
The system operated on a binary logic, possession equals guilt, and the hackers understood this limitation perfectly. They engaged in what we call defense system weaponization.
Wow.
They took the game's multi-million dollar security shield and turned it into a sword to execute innocent players.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because the most insidious part of this entire technological attack is that it completely falls apart if the victim just ignores the item on the ground.
Yep. If you don't pick it up, nothing happens.
Right. The malware didn't auto-execute. The hackers didn't compromise the victim's hardware. They exploited something far more vulnerable, human psychology.
Humans are consistently the weakest link in any security apparatus. It's almost a cliche in cybersecurity, but it's true. The attackers relied entirely on social engineering.
They manipulated the culture.
Exactly. They manipulated the established culture of the environment they were infiltrating.
Because the Souls community. The players who dedicate themselves to these grueling From Software games, they have a very specific decade-old culture. Because the games are so punishing, there's this unspoken, honestly beautiful tradition where veteran players will invade a newcomer's game, but instead of slaughtering them, they'll drop powerful gear or rare weapons or in-game currency as a gift.
Just to help them survive.
Yeah, it's a hallmark of the community.
So when these victims saw an item materialize on the ground, their instinct wasn't suspicion or fear, it was gratitude. Or at the very least, benign curiosity.
They thought it was a gift.
The hackers weaponized an established community norm.
When you look at the accounts from the victims, it's just heartbreaking. There's a widely documented case of a Reddit user named OKCommunications7125. They had over 220 hours of legitimate progress.
Now that hurts to even hear.
An invader dropped an item, and assuming it was a friendly veteran offering a gift, they picked it up and their entire save was quarantined. Another user, Jesuis LaPamplemus, noted that they picked it up out of pure muscle memory.
Which makes total sense.
Seeing a glowing item on the ground and pressing the interact button is the fundamental gameplay loop. This is exactly like poisoning a charity food bank. The attackers took people's inherent generosity, their trust in the community's social contract, and used that exact trait as the mechanism for their destruction.
And the psychological fallout from that kind of betrayal is profound and lasting. When trust is broken in a digital community through a systemic failure like that, it changes user behavior on a massive scale.
Everyone gets paranoid.
Exactly. In the immediate aftermath, the community adopted a hyper-defensive posture. Forums and social media were flooded with warnings. Never pick up items from strangers. Play offline.
It killed the vibe.
It did. The hackers didn't just break the game's code. They successfully manipulated human behavior, forcing an open, collaborative community into isolation.
And the real salt in the wound here is how the corporate creators responded to those terrified players. You have community whose trust is shattered by a technical oversight on the developer's end. Innocent players are being exiled for half a year.
And how did the publishers respond initially?
Initially, From Software and Bandai Namco met this crisis with absolute radio silence.
Which is the worst thing you can do. The lack of communication left players entirely reliant on automated customer support systems, which only compounded the trauma.
It was basically talking to a brick wall.
Victims who submitted detailed tickets explaining the exact sequence of events and proving their innocence received automated responses that were completely detached from the reality of the situation.
The customer support ultimatum was honestly staggering. Support essentially told these victims, delete your 220-hour save file, completely reinstall the game, and you might avoid the permanent ban. Otherwise, wait out the 6 months in quarantine.
Unbelievable.
They were telling players to manually erase hundreds of hours of effort, character builds, and completed storylines for a crime they did not commit, just to appease the algorithm. It is exactly like being accused of arson and the authorities telling you, well, if you demolish your own house right now and salt the earth, we'll drop the charges.
Punishing the victim twice to protect the system.
Exactly.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this exposes a massive power imbalance between digital consumers and corporate entities.
How so?
Well, when we deal with automated, unfeeling enforcement systems, there is no digital player bill of rights. The end user license agreements, the EULAs, give the publisher nearly absolute discretion.
Right. You agree to their rules when you install it.
And if an algorithm that cannot understand context decides you are guilty, you have no recourse. You are guilty by digital decree.
The developers did eventually deploy an emergency patch, though, right? In late April 2022, it ran a script that automatically deleted the deathbed smalls from every player's inventory and lifted the bans.
Yeah, but for many, this correction came far too late.
Oh, because they already deleted their saves.
Exactly. Players who had panicked, followed customer support's terrible advice, and deleted their saves had already lost everything permanently. There was no way to restore their progress.
That is rough.
And what makes this particularly frustrating from a cybersecurity perspective is that this was not an isolated, unprecedented event. The history of online gaming is littered with examples of weaponized anti-cheat systems.
Wait, really? This has happened before.
Oh, yeah. Back in 2016, in Dark Souls 3, hackers gifted items with impossible, mathematically broken stats to corrupt innocent players' save files.
Same exact developer, too.
Yep. And between 2013 and 2020 in GTA Online, modders found exploits to forcibly drop hacked money onto innocent players, which triggered Rockstar's automated wealth detection bans.
Oh man, getting banned because someone threw fake money at you.
We saw similar item duplication bans in Rust and corrupted gear sent through the in-game mail system in World of Warcraft Classic.
So the pattern is identical across the board. The security system assumes possession equals guilt. It fails to verify the origin of the item, and the innocent player pays the ultimate price while the hacker walks away clean.
It highlights a systemic architectural flaw in how developers build detection software. They prioritize the integrity of the server over the protection of the individual user. They build a net to catch the bad guys, but fail to realize that the bad guys are perfectly capable of throwing innocent people into that exact same net.
So, jumping forward to the present day in 2026, the massive success of Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, we can actually see how the industry has attempted to evolve past this architectural flaw.
Things have definitely changed.
The state of multiplayer gaming today is significantly more secure, primarily because of a shift toward robust server-side validation.
Right, and server-side validation fundamentally changes the math of an interaction. Instead of just letting an item drop to the ground and checking the save file later, the game server acts as an active, real-time customs agent.
It checks it right away.
If a player tries to drop an item, the server instantly checks that specific player's playthrough history. It calculates the probability. It asks, is it mathematically possible for this player to legitimately own this item at this stage of the game?
And if it's cut content?
If the answer is no, or if the item is flagged as cut content, the server blocks the action entirely. The item never even renders on the ground.
That makes so much more sense. And in addition to real-time validation, the industry is heavily utilizing machine learning for behavioral analysis now.
Looking at the whole picture.
Exactly. Instead of blindly scanning a save file for an illegal string of code, the AI assesses the player's holistic behavior. If an account has hundreds of hours of normal progression, standard movement inputs, and suddenly acquires one impossible item, the algorithm possesses the context to realize this player is likely a victim of an exploit, not a malicious actor running a cheat engine.
We are also seeing the introduction of automated AI appeal systems, which are designed to process false positives in hours instead of weeks, and the implementation of graduated response systems.
So no more instant 180-day bans.
Right. Instead of a binary choice between doing nothing or issuing a massive ban, the system might silently quarantine a suspicious account for 24 hours while an advanced AI, or even a human moderator, reviews the context of the flag.
I know there's also the ongoing exploration of blockchain technology for immutable item provenance. By attaching a permanent, unalterable digital receipt to every single item dropped in a game, showing exactly how it was created and who traded it, the origin problem is theoretically solved.
Theoretically, yes. Though the environmental and computational costs of running ledger systems for every health potion dropped in a video game make it a highly controversial solution.
Yeah, that seems like overkill.
It is. But practically speaking, for anyone navigating these digital spaces today, the defensive strategies remain largely the same. Regularly back up your local save files to an external drive.
Always a good idea.
Consider playing offline when exploring new content to eliminate the risk of invasion entirely. And above all, if a stranger drops an item and immediately disconnects, walk away.
But, you know, this brings up a really big question for me. By locking down item drops so severely and constantly policing interactions with ML and server checks, don't developers risk slowly suffocating the unpredictable, emergent social interactions that made these communities so magical in the first place?
That's the trade-off.
If every player is terrified to accept a legitimate gift from a veteran because they fear an automated ban, the culture of the community dies.
That is the eternal scale of cybersecurity, whether we're talking about a video game or a massive financial institution. On one side, you have airtight, absolute security. On the other side, you have user experience, freedom, and emergent interaction.
You can't have 100% of both.
No, as you increase the rigidity of one, you almost inevitably decrease the capacity for the other. Finding that equilibrium without crushing the user experience is the greatest challenge security architects face today.
So what does this all mean? When we pull back and look at the whole picture, we've talked extensively about video games, cut content, and digital underwear.
The weirdest topics. Seriously. But the core lesson of the Deathbed Smalls incident extends far beyond any single medium. We are all living in a society increasingly governed by automated algorithms. We are surrounded by systems that excel at detection, but fail completely at context and attribution.
Context is everything.
And when an algorithm cannot tell the difference between a malicious act and an innocent mistake, every single one of us becomes vulnerable to exploitation.
And that leads to a rather chilling thought about the trajectory of our digital lives, honestly.
What do you mean?
Well, we've seen exactly how a gaming community's inherent trust was weaponized through a simple, poisoned gift. As artificial intelligence and automated moderation take over broader, vastly more important aspects of our daily lives, our bank accounts monitoring for fraudulent transfers, our professional social media accounts scanning for terms of service violations, our automated tax software.
Right. What happens when malicious actors figure out how to reliably weaponize those systems? Will we reach a point in society where we become so paralyzed by the threat of algorithmic punishment that we are too terrified to digitally interact with strangers at all?
That is terrifying.
We have to ask ourselves if we are prepared for a future where a single unverified digital gift could automatically erase our financial or professional livelihoods with no human oversight to hear our appeal.
It fundamentally changes how you view every digital interaction.
Hmm.
I mean, a 220-hour save file being deleted is devastating, sure, but an automated, irreversible freeze on your bank account because a machine learning algorithm lapped human contests.
It could ruin your life.
It truly could. Just remember, the next time you see a beautifully wrapped package sitting on your digital porch, it is almost always better to leave it completely alone. Thank you for joining us as we unpack this deep dive.
Stay safe out there.